to the Grueling Truth Super Bowl week, brought to you by Gridiron Mo, a new interactive football app. Make sure you check it out for the Super Bowl. You can actually sit with your wife and kids, and it's not as complicated as fantasy football. You can sit there, predict what play is going to come, and compete against each other like that. Of course, for the NFL show, I'm your host, Mike Goodpasture. I want to welcome in my co-host, Matt Andrew-Scavage.
How's everything going tonight, Mike?
Oh, everything's going great. We have a very special guest for Super Bowl week. We might as well get somebody who's won a couple Super Bowls. He was a stalwart on Super Bowl 13 and 14 Steel Curtain for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Help me welcome to the Grueling Truth, Gary Dunn.
Well, hey, glad to be here, guys. A big, big week this week.
Yep, most definitely. So let's just start from the beginning with you. At what age did you start playing football?
Oh, boy. You know what? I played Little League, Pee Wee football on up through, high school. And, you know, it's like I tell people, I go, how'd you know you're going to play college football? I didn't know I was going to play high school football. You just keep on playing, and then somebody tells you, hey, you got a chance to play high school, you got a chance to play college, and so on and so forth. And then you go on, and all of a sudden the pros start talking to you. And you go, well, I'll go give it a shot at the pros. So that's how it's kind of come about.
What do you most remember about your younger days playing football?
You know what? I'll tell you one thing I remember, and I tell my son this, that I was in a 115-pound class, and my dad always told me, my dad was a football player and a coach. He coached at Miami for 15 years. He's on the Ring of Honor at the University of Miami. He held like 40 records there for years. So he was a football guy. And he always said, son, he said, if you're not having fun out there, then you shouldn't do it. And I had a coach at 115-pound weight class that thought he was coaching the Super Bowl. And he was just all over us. And one day my dad walked in and he said, come on, let's go. I said, Dad, I'm not going. So what do you mean? You told me if I'm not having fun and I don't like what I'm doing, that I don't have to go. And he goes, you don't like what you're doing? I go, no, I don't like to coach. I'm not having fun. And so I quit. And, you know, I look back at that and I go, you know, the next year I went and played again and went on through my whole rest of my career. But that was definitely a bump in the road that, you know, I could have just said to heck with it. I don't think I like the game just because of a coach that was a little overzealous, you know. So I remember that part. You know, high school was a great experience. I played in a real big high school called Coral Gables High School. It was a big football powerhouse down here. They won the state championship and the mythical national championship. My team I played on at Coral Gables my junior year, four guys in that team went on to play in the pros, Neil Colsey, Glenn Cameron, Ralph Ortega, and myself off of that high school football team. So that was quite something. And then I went to the University of Miami. When Miami was in turmoil, I had three head coaches in 4 years. It was a freaking mess there then. And that same thing, I got into where I'm like, what am I doing out here on this field? You know, the place was in chaos, and, you know, a new coach would come in, tell you what you did before was the wrong thing, and we're the right thing, and so on and so forth, and that was tough, you know. And then I ended up fortunate to get drafted in the sixth round, but I didn't think it was so fortunate to get drafted to the Pittsburgh Steelers, who just won two Super Bowls at the time, and they had the Steel Curtain defense, Mean Joe Green, L.C. Greenwood, Ernie Holmes, and Dwight White. And I even had guys, my teammates and stuff, going, hey, Gary, what are you going to do, beat out Mean Joe Green? And I'm going, you know what, I'm probably not going to beat out Mean Joe Green. I mean, let's be real about it. So that's kind of how it went.
You bring that up. I mean, the Steelers had arguably the greatest defense in NFL history. How did you go about proving yourself when you got there?
You know what I did, I went there, and it's probably not what you would think. I went there thinking I'm not going to make the team. You know, everybody wants you to say, oh, I'm going to make the team, and I'm spot. I said, you know what, I'm probably not going to make the team. But what I did was I worked myself out the best way, the best shape of my life. I mean, I worked with guys, I ran with linebackers, I ran with all the faster guys. I tried to do all their workouts. So the reason I did that was, first of all, I wanted to make the team. Second of all, when I didn't make the team, I didn't want to look back and think I could have done something more. You know, I didn't want to feel like I didn't give it my best effort to make that football team. So if I went there and I wasn't in shape or I thought I could do more, I figure I'd be a frustrated guy sitting on the bar chair, you know, down the road. So as it turned out, I was very fortunate, and they kept one extra defensive lineman for me to be on the team that year. So it worked out good.
So you played for some great coaches with Steelers. What was your experience like playing for George Pearls?
Oh, George. I love George. George was a character. He was a great coach. Loved George. George, I credit. I changed the way I played college football. I was a lot better ball player in the pros because of the techniques that George taught me. And I had a very good coach at University of Miami also, but it was a little bit old school to what they were doing in the pros. And the stuff I learned from George and that training camp really changed the way that I played. But he was a character. He was a positive guy. I mean, I liked him because he was a positive coach, and you really want to do more for him. But he would chew you out too. And, you know, he was just he was a great guy to play with. When I went in there my rookie year, I got drafted in the sixth round, which isn't real high. Plus, you're going to the Steelers. So, but I looked, and I was the highest defensive lineman drafted. Well, they had a guy named Bob Barber, who was which I didn't know about, and he's in training camp. He was their number two round draft pick the year before. They couldn't come to contract terms, so he went and played in Canada. So all of a sudden, I got this Bob Barber. Well, Bob Barber was a physical specimen. He ran a 4.5 40, and you know, he was all this. And George just loved Bob. You know, George was, you know, and I'm here just a rookie, and all I did was hear about Bob and Bob this and Bob that, and so I'm thinking, well, this is not going to work out. Well, our first preseason game was against the New Orleans Saints down in New Orleans, and George actually saw me out. Of course, I'm a University of Miami guy. The night before, I was on Bourbon Street, and he caught me in Pat O'Brien's. And he looked over at me, and I saw that glare. And before I ran out for the pregame, and George stopped me. He said, "Did you have a good time last night, Gary?" I said, "Yes, sir. I had a pretty good time." He goes, "Well, you're on kickoff return, punt return. You're going to play every play. If you dog it one step, I am going to put you on the bus, and you're out of here." And I was going, well, okay, here we go. So I played. I mean, I ran and did everything. George would follow me off the sidelines and come to the bench and start yelling at me and stuff. And I'm thinking, well, I'm gone. I said, but all I did was say, I'm going to give it everything I got. So I worked my tail off. And after that game, George came up and a couple of days later when they saw the film, shook my hand and said, "Great job," and they traded Bob Barber. So after that, me and George, we were great. The whole rest of the time, George was there as my coach, and really liked George.
So were there any players that took you under their wing when you got to Pittsburgh?
You know what? I had some of the younger guys. I would say Steve Furness and John Banaszak. They were like the guys that were behind the Steel Curtain guys, which was LC, Joe, and Ernie Holmes, and Dwight White. But honestly, those guys couldn't have been nicer to me. All those guys, I mean, Joe Green, and I always heard of Joe Green. I'm like a little, you know, but Joe would pull me over and tell me stuff I'm doing wrong and try to help me. And so I had guys like that. It was a very, you know, those guys didn't make you feel like you're, you know, that you're an outsider. They took you under and they wanted you to, you know, learn from what they know. The only guy I was really scared of was Ernie Holmes. Ernie scared me. Ernie was about 5 foot, maybe 6 foot, let's say. He came into training camp that year at 330 pounds, and he had an arrow cut out of his hair on his head because it pointed the way of the quarterback. Well, and that, so that guy, he scared me, especially one day when they put out a platter of deviled eggs for our whole training table. Ernie ate 72 of them.
So be bad to be a linebacker, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't even tell you the rest of what happened out at the 95-degree temperature in practice. It was pretty bad. Ernie's eggs ended up on the field, so there you go.
Was there a moment, like at camp or something like that, where everything seemed to click and you realized that you were going to fit in with these guys?
You know what? I don't know if I could say that. I really was, you know, it was down to the last cut for me. Back then, see, they had 6 preseason games. Plus, they used to play this college all-star game, which the all-stars from college played the world champion, whoever won the Super Bowl from the year before. So that would be 7 games we had. And then we had the rookies, we came in 2 weeks early. So we had 9 weeks of training camp, basically, which is crazy to what they do now. You know, we had 9 weeks, and then right. They announce who makes the team. So, you know, I don't think there was any one moment that, you know, I said, okay, I got this, because I never knew I had it till the last cut. And even then, just because you make the team, don't mean they can't cut you the next day. I mean, you know, there's no guarantees. Nowadays, they got some guaranteed contracts, or you at least get some money that if they get rid of you, you know, you at least have that. But back in those days, heck no, man. They tell you, hey, see ya. So that's the way it was.
You played for Chuck Knoll, one of the greatest coaches in NFL history. The Steelers teams won, you know, 4 Super Bowls in 6 years. How did he keep the team so focused?
Chuck was a different guy. He was a disciplinarian. He wasn't a man of a lot of words. He kept you on your toes. He was a hard guy to try to read, in other words, to see really what kind of person he was. But he was very smart. He's the type of a coach that, you know, a lot of head coaches, you know, wouldn't be able to go around to every position on the field and show you techniques. Well, Chuck Knoll would come down the defensive line and show us techniques. So you think he would just know the quarterbacks or the offense or something, but he was the type of guy. He was a hands-on guy. Let me tell you something. If he didn't know it, he'll go back and read a book about it and then come back and tell you about it, you know. But everybody respected Chuck. They had a little fear of Chuck, you know, because Chuck didn't mess around. I mean, I remember one time my rookie year, I walked in to the meeting. I was 5 minutes early. Meeting was at 8 o'clock. And Chuck looks at me, and everybody looks at me, and I look up. I see the clock, 8:05. And I said, Chuck said, well, nice for you to come by, Gary. And I said, Coach, it's 8:05. He goes, I said to be here at 8 on my time. My time says 8:05. So the next day I was there at 7:30, you know. That's the way Chuck is. Chuck didn't mess around, and you know, all the rest of the ball players fell in line with what Chuck was trying to do. He was a great coach, and really, after you got to know Chuck, he just was a great guy. He had a lot more. He didn't let out a lot. You know, he's one of these people that kept it in, but he really was a great guy.
Now, I always hear about how that Steelers team was full of practical jokers. Any of those stories you would like to share?
Well, there was quite a few. I guess one of the more infamous ones was in training camp. We had the dorms. We stayed at St. Vincent's, which was a Catholic school up in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. And we all stayed on one floor, but there was only one guy that stayed. There was one floor that nobody stayed on besides one guy, and that would be Jack Lambert. Now, Jack Lambert stayed up there because nobody wanted him on our floor anyway. So we left Jack up there. Well, there was a guy in our team named Tom Beasley, a defensive lineman. Tom was a farm boy from Virginia, and Tom brought a guy out there that they used to, you know how they bag those snakes, the rattlesnakes, and they see how many you could bag and put into a bag. Well, this guy brings a rattlesnake in a cage out to training camp. So everybody's over there afterwards, and Jack Lambert is deathly scared of snakes. Well, he comes over there, and everybody's, you know, poking the rattlesnake, snapping at the cage, and Jack looks at Tom Beasley and said, "Tom, you get that freaking snake out of this camp, or I'm calling the police." So Tom says, "Okay, Jack, okay." So we leave. Well, we got meetings, and we got curfew at like 11 o'clock. We go out and have a few beers. We come back by 11 o'clock. Well, Tom Beasley put the cage up in Jack's room. Well, all of a sudden, about 11:30, I hear this, "Murder, this is attempted murder." Jack Lambert running down his underwear, cowboy boots, and a cowboy hat down the hallway saying, "It's murder. Tom Beasley's murder. He's trying to kill me." Well, everybody's out in the hallway now. I'm out here because Chuck Noll out of his room. He had a little robe on and stuff. I thought it was kind of cute. But anyway, he goes, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "Chuck, there's a rattlesnake in my room right now that Tom Beasley put there. I want you to call the police and have him arrested." So Chuck is one of these analytical guys. You know, Chuck always, like, ponders things and thinks them out. He goes, "Well, Jack, let's go up and see if we can find the snake." So everybody goes up to the third floor with Chuck first and then Jack, and there's about 10 of us behind him just looking. So Chuck walks in the room, and there's the rattlesnake cage. There's the top of it open. And Chuck looks at Jack and says, "Well, Jack, did you actually see the rattlesnake in that cage in your room?" Because Jack said he saw it earlier. And Jack looked at Chuck. He says, "Chuck, that snake is in this room. I heard it. And you need to arrest Tom Beasley." So all of a sudden, Chuck goes, "All right, get out of here. Just close the door. Close the door." So we close the door, right? So everybody goes downstairs, and we talk about it, and we get a good laugh. And, you know, Tom says, "Jack, there's no snake. Snake's gone. It's a joke. So everybody goes to bed, like, late, like 1 o'clock. And Jack goes back up to his room, and all of a sudden we hear this scream. "Ah, attempted murder. It's attempted murder." Lambert running down the steps again, down to the hallway. And what happened was Beasley put a rubber snake under his pillow. We got the it was a rubber snake under his pillow. That was a good one. That was one of the better ones.
That's great. What was it like for you to face the great Mike Webster every day in practice?
It was terrible. I mean, I hated him. He made me feel like I could never play. I remember when they moved me to a nose tackle, right? So we went from a 4-3 to a 3-4 defense. Well, I got to go line up now with Mike Webster. Well, at the time, I lost weight to try. I thought I was going to lead the team in sacks the year before, so I thought I was going to be rushing the roster. Well, all of a sudden, I'm nose tackle. Well, we have our first scrimmage, and I got a scrimmage live 25 plays against Mike Webster. So, I know Mike, we're friends. So I said, "Hey, Mike," I said, "listen, how about taking it easy on me?" I said, "You're all pro for years." I go, "I'm trying to stay on this team, and I'm playing a position. I don't know what I'm doing." And he says, "Oh, yeah, no, Donnie, don't worry. Don't worry, Donnie. I'll take it easy on you. Yeah, don't worry. I'll make you look good," he told me. So I said, "Okay." So we go out there to first play. Webby came off the ball, picked me up, threw me on my back, almost broke Lambert's ankle. And Lambert looks down at me and goes, "Hey, Donnie, are you going to be able to play this game or not?" And I go, "Oh, boy, here we go." He proceeded to make me look terrible. He just made me all just kill me all day. So I'm afterwards, and I'm sitting in the locker room going, well, I guess that's that. I go, obviously, they're not going to keep me after the way I looked against Webby. And so I'm like pretty depressed. But we had off that night. We only had off like one day a week. So everybody would drive into town. Well, I had a CJ7 Jeep. And so I says, you know what? This is probably it for me anyway. I went down to the store. I got a case of beer. I threw it on the floor. Just took about four bags of ice, no cooler on the Jeep. I just started driving down I-79 back to Pittsburgh. So I'm popping some beers. And here comes Mike Webster by me in his Lincoln Continental. And I see him. He tries to wave at me while I give him the finger. And he looks at me like, hey, what's your problem? So we pull over the side of the Pennsylvania Turnpike. And there's Webby there. And he comes in. He goes, oh, Dunny, you got a beer? So we sit there on my bumper drinking some beer. And I'm saying, Webby, why'd you make me look so bad? He goes, no, you did pretty good. I go, Webby, I got knocked backwards. I said, I couldn't make a play. I go, what are you talking about? I said, you killed me. And Webby goes, well, no. So then we started working on technique. We're lining up on the side of the Pennsylvania Turnpike on three-point stances and doing pass rush drills and run blocking where he's showing me hand techniques and stuff like that. Well, so we're doing this, and we're sitting there drinking more beer, and finally – the last one, he says, now come off the ball on me. I mean, we're in our street clothes. So I come off the ball, let him grab him, and I put him up on the hood of his car. So he goes, that's it. That's what you got to do. So I feel pretty good about myself. I go, all right, man, okay. Yeah, I feel good. And Webby says, okay, Dunny. He says, I got to go, but let's do one more. Okay, let's do one more. So we do one more. He picks me up and throws me over the guardrail of the side of the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Gets back in his Lake Continental and just starts laughing and said, have a nice night. I was Webby.
I was just going to interrupt you because we got to pay some bills. We got to get a commercial break in here real quick. So go ahead and check out a commercial from Gridiron Mo. I believe Leon Searcy is the one that's doing that commercial. And then also check out SteelbergBox.com for all your Pittsburgh Steeler fans' needs. So check that out, especially for birthday parties. We'll be right back with former Pittsburgh Steeler Gary Dunn right after this.
I'd like to tell you about our new website, www.SteelbergBox.com. A monthly fan box service built to take a fan's passion for the Pittsburgh Steelers to a whole new level. Offering three different fan boxes to choose from and several different plans, fans are guaranteed to get way more value in their box than they paid. It's simple. Drop by www.steelbergbox.com. Choose the category and size. Men, women, youths, and infants. Then, pick one of our three Steelers merchandise fan boxes. After you choose your fan box, hit subscribe. Then choose your monthly plan. You're done. Go Steelers.
This is former All-Pro Leon Searcy. I've got a new interactive app called Gridiron Mo, where you get to call the plays, offense or defense, and a live NFL game. You get to interact with other fans, pick the play, pick the call. That's Gridiron Mo.
All right, we're back on The Grueling Truth. Make sure you check out Gridiron Mo at SteelbergBox.com. We're with former Pittsburgh Steeler great Gary Dunn, played on the Super Bowl 13, 14 winning teams. So, Gary, let's go to this. The Steelers eventually went to a three-man line. What was the transition like for you moving to nose tackle?
Oh, man, I tell you what, I wish I wouldn't have done it. It's hard. Playing nose tackle is like somebody said one time, is like playing in traffic on I-95. I mean, it's just a brutal position. I mean, you know, there's always two guys on you, and, you know, you just get beat up every play. So I really, looking back at my career, I enjoyed playing a 4-3 tackle a lot more than playing nose tackle, but when the coaches ask you to do it, and then you do it. So I did as best as I could do, but it was it definitely had its ups and downs, that's for sure.
What do you remember most about your two Super Bowl experiences?
You know what? The first Super Bowl was in Miami, which is where I'm from. And I'll tell you what I can remember is that we got the bye, and I can't tell you, I can't remember the price of those tickets, but we got to buy 20 tickets if you were a player on the team. Well, I came down here, and I got my parents, and I got relatives, and my mom's going, Gary, we need a ticket for Aunt so-and-so and Uncle this and Uncle that. And I go, well, tell them that the ticket is, I'm thinking the ticket then was $60 or something. Whatever it was, but to me, you know, I'm making $28,000 a year in a 50% tax bracket. So I'm going, it's a lot of money to me. So anyway, so my mom proceeds to say, well, I'm going to pay for the tickets. And I go, you know what, Mom, you're not paying for the tickets. So she gave away 20 of my tickets. So now I'm thinking I'm going to lose money on this game. So I was sitting there going, you know what, I got to do something. So I went into the Steelers and I said, listen, I'm from here. Is there any way I could get 20 more tickets? And they said, yeah, you know what? You should have more. You're from here. So they gave me more tickets, and I scalped the heck out of them and made some money off of them. So that way I wasn't in the hole. We played in that right. game in front of the hometown crowd was great. Obviously, winning the first Super Bowl was really special. And, you know, doing the locker room and the champagne and everything else. And here's a story that I think there was an article on it. I'm in the shower after Super Bowl 13 against the Cowboys in Miami. And there's a guy next to me showering. And Dwight White's on the other side of him. So I said, I'm looking at this guy. He says, hey, congratulations. I said, okay. Well, I don't recognize this guy. I mean, it's all guys on the team in the shower, you know, so the coaches have their own shower and stuff. So afterwards, I walked away and I said, Dwight, who was that guy? He said, no, they say that was Chuck Knoll's nephew. Well, it turns out he was just nobody, snuck his way through security. That was great security, right? Snuck his way through security and went in inside to take a shower with us. So I tell people that, I go, no way. I go, I'm telling you right now, there was an article about this guy doing that. So that was crazy. The next Super Bowl 14 was kind of special. Well, they're all special, obviously. But, you know, that game was we were actually pretty flat. We played the Rams, and we were pretty flat the first half. And actually into the second half until Jack Lambert made an interception and he started coming in defense yelling at everybody saying, what are we doing? You know, everybody was, I don't know why. We just were kind of lethargic. Then we picked it up and won that game. And I didn't play against right across the line, but the guy that was on the team for the Rams played the other guard was Dennis Hera. And Dennis Hera was my roommate in college. So that game, it was just because I was playing against him, and his team was special for that reason, not to mention, obviously, winning and playing in a Super Bowl. But we did some stuff in some piles that, you know, only kids would do, like in Little League. I mean, I go, you know, we were punching each other and hitting each other and everything, and I go, you know, there's millions of people watching this thing, so. It was pretty wild, but yeah, they both were different, but obviously both victories was a great thing.
All right, now you talked about getting the extra tickets when you wanted them. You had the Rooney family as the owners. Always heard nothing but good things about the way they take care of their players. What are your thoughts, recollections about Art and Dan Rooney?
Great, Art Senior, the Chief, who I was fortunate enough to be there. Was so class, such a great guy. I can't say enough about him. Dan was also and is a very classy guy, great great owners, make you feel like you're part of the family. And Art, Dan's son now, same way. He used to be actually a ball boy when I was there in the locker room. I mean, they had all the kids and the cousins and everything. They worked, they worked the locker room and stuff. So they were just a great people to play for. One time, this is the way the Chief was. In the off season, I picked up I get a postcard sent to me, and I'm looking at it, and I'm saying, it's a picture of a horse, but not of the head of the horse, the other end of the horse. And it's in this postcard. I'm looking. Doesn't say anything. I turned it around. It said, "Thinking of you, Art Rooney." So I just said, "Oh, that's a classic right there." That's the way the guy was. He was great. But no, I was very fortunate to play first of all in Pittsburgh, also with the Rooney family, and it was a great experience.
How important was it to you to play all 12 years with the same team?
Well, you know what, looking back at it and what goes on nowadays, that's kind of a rare thing. But I was very happy to stay in Pittsburgh. I actually heard after I was done that it was close. They were working on a trade for me to go to the Oakland Raiders, which, I kind of like the Raiders too. That might not have been too bad, but I really liked staying in Pittsburgh, playing for the fans that are there and that town of Pittsburgh and the support you get. I think I'm very fortunate to play all my years there in Pittsburgh.
All right. What's your opinion on the NFL rules on how players are allowed to hit nowadays?
You know what? I don't like them, but I understand what they're doing. We didn't know about this concussion stuff back then. I understand really what they're doing is trying to save the game. They got to make the game safer, keep the game around. And so I think it's stuff they have to do. I don't like it. I think it takes away from the game. I think the defense is totally, handcuffed with, what they can do with tackling and stuff. And I see these replays with targeting and I go, how in the world, how fast that stuff. And you watch these replays and people go, yeah, look at it. And we hit him in the head. I go, when you're out there, that's a split second. That is going by so fast that it makes it so hard. But I do understand what they're doing. I understand why they're doing it. I think they have to do it, but I do like the game better the way it was.
Yeah.
So many of your colleagues have suffered from injuries during their playing days. In your opinion, has the NFL done enough for these players?
My opinion is that no. I don't think, the old guys, which is me and which I am, the pre-93 guys, they really kind of dogged everybody with their pensions. And I mean, forever we were supposed to get a better pension and, they were going to take care of us. And, the guys nowadays, pensions are, three times ours and they make all this much more money, which, that's fine. Now is now and then is then. But I think a lot of it, they forgot, the guys that went through all that. We played back then when those rules were that way. I played then when you could hold a guy up and actually the guy was allowed to go dive on your knee and that was legal. I see that block now, they suspend you for it. But we played in those years when the rules were just total physical, mayhem for you, and yet they don't want to try to help you out. And so, I'm not happy with a lot of things that have been done, with that at all. I think they've kind of forgotten some of the old guys, and there's a lot of guys out there hurting, So it's.
Yeah, the thing is, the NFL, built their product basically in the 70s and 80s off NFL films and off hits like that and glorifying them.
You're right, and like I say, they. the rules, I mean, I think it was made the game more interesting to watch. But now all these rules protected everybody, not to mention, you know, they get their only allowed to go out and pad so often. You know, we had two, and we just were old school. We just beat each other up, and there were no rules about anything. And if anything, they have to look back and say, you know, look at these guys. These guys just absolutely beat their bodies up for a small amount of money, and now we're not going to take care of them. And I don't blame the owners, but I mean back our union. The union more than anything. The union to me. You know, the owners are cutting loose X amount of percentage of what they're making. You know, the union's the one that needs to funnel it. But what they do is they funnel it to the guys nowadays because they're paying the bills. And then the old guys, they just hope you die. And I didn't used to feel that way, but I'm telling you, it's not a good thing at all. You know, it definitely doesn't make you feel good about the way they've handled. And I know a lot of friends of mine and stuff are really hurting. So it's not good.
All right, so we've got the big Super Bowl 50 matchup coming up. What's your prediction? What are your thoughts on the upcoming Super Bowl game between Carolina and Denver?
You know what? Despite Mark Cooper, who is I'm tired of getting his text messages and all these little
cartoons. Oh, you get those too? I get them all.
Oh, my
gosh. My favorite team is the Bengals. So, you know, as soon as they beat the Bengals, you know, my phone starts dinging from him, so.
You see what I'm saying about his high-tech stuff? He's obnoxious.
Yeah,
you know,
I get emails from him.
Yeah, I root against the Broncos because of Mark Cooper. But it should be your buddy played for him, but he's so obnoxious, and I go, you know what, I hope they lose.
Well, and you know the bad thing is this. He just needs to face the fact that if Andy Dalton don't get hurt, Antonio Brown and them don't get hurt, the Bengals and Steelers would have both beat him by two touchdowns anyways.
Well, you know what? I agree with you. And we were texting during that game, and I was like, oh, no, you guys were lucky to get out of that frickin' thing. Yeah, I think the Panthers, I know everybody's probably picking the Panthers. I just, the thing that only if to me is that Denver defense is freaking good. So if they could have an unbelievable performance, but, you know, I think the Panthers offense has shown that they can play against anybody, so I think the Panthers are going to win.
Well, I saw today that 65% of America is cheering for the Panthers. Now, don't you believe that probably a lot of that has to do with Mark Cooper?
You know what?
65% of America against Mark Cooper.
That's a good call. I mean, they could.
Hey, what do you want to da da da? I don't know. What do y'all think we should da da da? Well, what did we da yesterday? Yesterday. All the dolls feel like the same doll these days. I know. Like, is today Monday or Tuesday? Today is Thursday. Oh no, I forgot to call my mom on her birthday. Oh no! No!
These days, nothing is normal and everything.